The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's most prominent
sports columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Thanks for joining us again on Mike Lupica Podcast. Today we'll be talking with a man who has written over 4,000 newspaper columns. He has been a regular on Morning Joe for as long as I can remember. He writes for the Daily Beast, and he's an award-winning broadcast and print journalist. He's a great Mike Barnicle. But before we get started with Michael, you've heard me talking about Gillette now since the first of the year, but they have been a part of my daily routine for as long as I can remember. They are a truly great brand and a great shave. Right now, I'm using the Pro Glide, and I'm a fan of the Fusion Gel Cream as well. You know what you're getting each time you use it, and that's a great shave. Gillette has great news that makes it even better experience. You can now get Gillette Performance delivered right to your door. Save time and money. Subscribe today and get every fourth order free. Check out Gillette online at www.gilletteondemand.com. I first met Mike Barnicle when I was writing for The Heights at Boston College. He had already started his column with the Boston Globe, which he wrote for more than two decades. He has been a mainstay on Morning Joe during the period where it has exploded and become part of the national conversation. He is, in addition to all that, his most important role, I think he would agree, is the mayor of Fenway Park, Boston, and really the unofficial head of baseball operations for the Boston Red Sox, my friend Mike Barnicle.
There's no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt about that. That's my most important function. That's my primary role in life. It's my primary occupation as well as my primary residence. Box 29, Row A, Fenway Park, now at 4 Jersey Street.
I have an admission to make to my friend Mike Barnicle. But Mr. Barnicle gave us 4 tickets in Box 29 last Friday night, and I was to take Taylor Lupica, Hannah Lupica, and Hannah's boyfriend. And the weather was as it has been for what feels like the entirety of 2018. And I have to confess, we did not attend the game.
Well, I don't blame you. I would not have sat down there in that weather. I can't remember a baseball spring, regular season baseball spring, as vicious as this was. I was watching a Yankee game a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. Tanaka was on the mound pitching, and it was clear, just on TV, it was clear he could not get a feel for the ball. So his primary go-to strikeout pitch was not working. You know, the cut fastball,
yeah.
It disappears.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, I think he lasted maybe 4 or 5 innings, but it was so clear. And it wasn't just Tanaka this spring. It was 9 out of 10 pitches. They could not get a hold of the baseball.
Talking to Mike Barnicle on the Gillette headset today. And Michael, what can they do? I understand.
I don't know.
They can't play all of the first month games in places where the weather is not going to be inclement. So they're kind of in a box. But you're right. We have both loved baseball our whole lives. I cannot remember a weather siege like this one in the month of April.
Well, you ask, what could they do? The things that they could do, the common sense way to approach this, it's all doable with one big exception. They could not get these doable do-overs through the Players Association.
Right.
You could play 4 handily picked doubleheaders a year, a season. Memorial Day doubleheader, July 4th doubleheader, a Labor Day doubleheader, and maybe one other inserted on some date. That takes care right there of a week and a half of games. You could front load the season. You could maybe go back to 158 games. You could start the season then about April 10th, 12th, the way it used to begin,
right,
instead of March 31st.
Right.
You might end up not having a World Series played in snow on November 1st, all of that. But the Players Association, I doubt very much they would go for that.
We're going to talk politics with Mr. Barnicle today, but nobody thinks about baseball more than he does, or is more passionate about it than he is. In fact, he doesn't call it baseball. He calls it the baseball.
It's the baseball. Yeah.
And which is one of my favorite expressions. So let's stay with baseball for a second. Mike, I've talked to Costas about this. I've talked to friends of mine who are as passionate about the game as we are. Have analytics enhanced your enjoyment of watching baseball?
Not really. I understand their function.
Yeah, me too.
Their role. I appreciate some of the new analytics that they've had, you know, but, you know, part of it, I understand the show business aspect of it, and it's part, I hope, of lowering the demographic of baseball fans.
Right, right.
I mean, people our age, it's great. We love baseball, but, you know, you're looking at 14 and 15 years of age, people like that.
Yeah.
You know, baseball's competition now is international, and it's soccer, I think, much more than it is the NBA. And baseball doesn't take advantage of that because they have Chinese players, Japanese players, Korean players, Mexican players, and they ought to be taking more advantage of that. But with regard to the analytics, some clearly, if you're managing a team, running a team, general manager, they are vital. But as a fan, they don't enhance my experience of the game. I mean, I'm sitting there at a game. I don't care what speed the ball comes off the bat.
Exit velocity.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And, you know, I appreciate the distance that some of these guys can hit the baseball, but I don't necessarily have to know that was 453 feet and came off the bat at 110 miles an hour. I understand it's fun for the occasional fan. They go, wow. But if you watch the game every day, and listen, we have to admit, we watch too much of it.
Yes, we do.
You know, it doesn't enhance my.
And we think about it too much. We think about it way too much.
What's too much all the time?
Well, I would say one of these years, I don't know how I could do it because I'm always losing stuff on my phone. It would be interesting to count up how many times across a baseball season, just the two of us, text back and forth about a day, a game we're watching, the next game that's about to be played, the Yankees and the Red Sox. We spend way too much thinking about baseball.
I was talking to someone the other day, a fairly prominent guy, who has a young son, who has become a real Red Sox fan, and he was taking such pride in his young boy's newfound affinity for baseball and the Red Sox, and he was telling me how tremendous a Red Sox fan the kid was, and that he wakes up every morning and says, you know, Dad, did the Red Sox win last night? And he says, and I tell him the score. He says, but that's now a daily part of our life. I said, you will find out that as he grows to love the game and enjoy the game and the Red Sox, he won't become a real legitimate Red Sox fan, a real dyed-in-the-wool Red Sox fan, until that morning he wakes up and instead of asking you how the Red Sox did last night, if he asks you, did the Yankees lose? That's the key.
We're talking to Mike Barnicle on the Gillette headset. Mike, how alarmed are you by the rapid, ever-increasing tsunami of strikeouts?
You know, it's really the strikeout phenomenon is really interesting, and I think part of it has to do with this reliance on more and more teams and more hitting coaches. You know, you got to elevate the ball. You know, you got to get the ball up in the air. You got to hit the home runs is where the big money is, and it's sort of a latter day incarnation, at least to me, of you know, the plays of the week on SportsCenter, where, you know, everybody was trying to do one thing or another thing in order to make that, you know, top 10 plays of the week because that was the salary boost.
Coin of the realm, yeah.
And now you have a combination of increased strikeouts and increased home runs. I mean, look at last year. I mean, who didn't hit 30 home runs
right.
last year? And who didn't strike out 150
times? Oh, I know.
Times?
Anybody the Red Sox had.
Well, no one hit home runs for the Red Sox last year. But, you know, I mean, you know better than I do. You know, the game has evolved forever. And it's evolving again now into another phase of the game. You know, the strikeout pitchers. Not so long ago, Mike Lupica, not so long ago, a team would be thrilled at getting the number one or number two starter who was facing them out of the game by the fifth or sixth inning. Now you get the number one or number two starter out of the game after five, and you're facing, you know, maybe three, four guys who throw like 110 miles an hour.
Right. No, Mike, Zach Lupica sent me a stat today. Verlander's stats against the Yankees, including last night, which is the game which he struck out 13 or 14, left after the eighth. The bullpen coughed it up in the ninth. I think it's 24 innings pitched. He's given up one earned run to the Yankees since he's been a Houston Astro. But you talk about something that worries me about baseball. In the NBA or the NFL, you can anticipate that often the best action will happen in the fourth quarter and often late in the fourth quarter. A culture has now been created because of the importance of big arms out of the bullpen, where, and I think they worry about this on Park Avenue at the Major League Baseball offices, where the fans are being told, if your bullpen is good enough and your team has the lead in the sixth inning, the game is over. And I don't know what you can do to mitigate against that.
Well, I don't either. But, you know, baseball, unlike the other sports, is so filled with so many opportunities, it's a random chance kind of a game. Last night, the Red Sox are up by one in the ninth inning. They bring in the best closer in baseball, yep. Craig Kimbrel. He throws too many pitches to the first batter, but he gets them, strikes him out with a 98 mile and a fastball. The second guy up hasn't hit a home run all year, Alex Gordon, underperforming for the last 18 months. Okay?
Right.
Kimbrel comes down the pipe with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, and it's, you know, right field, which is a pop in Fenway
Park.
Yes,
it is.
Through, you know, not warm air, through cold air, game tied. Red Sox go on to lose the game in extra innings. So there's the random chance that you're going to get wood on the ball, even though it's, you know,
what Kimbrel Devers did to Chapman last year, taking 102 or 103 yeah. mile-per-hour fastball to the opposite field in what was the biggest regular season game the Red Sox and the Yankees played last year and hitting it out of the park.
I understand the concern in the commissioner's office about that. And the concern, I think, is twofold because of, A, what you said. You get, you know, guys coming out of the bullpen who throw like that. And the other concern would have to be that teams are now consciously building their clubs to that point.
Yes.
The Yankees are built
to that point. Yeah.
I mean, they got Chad's Mr. Strikeout Green.
Right.
They got Betances, and they got Chapman. That's a seventh,
and by the way, and throw David Robertson into the mix, too.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I wrote about this the other day, and everything we thought could happen this year between the Yankees and the Red Sox, so much has happened just in the first month. The Red Sox start 17-2. The Yankees start 9-10, okay? And you think, holy crap, they might be 15 games ahead by the end of May. And then the narrative flips because the narrative is constantly flipping in baseball. And if the Yankees hadn't shown up in Houston, I honestly thought that the Yankees might be in first place by the time the Red Sox get to Yankee Stadium next week.
Well, I mean, the Yankees are, as we do this, only three games out. They were eight games out, you know, the snap of a finger ago. I mean, but that's part of the beauty of
baseball. And they'd be six games out if it weren't for Gary Sanchez, who in the last week has hit three game-winning home runs.
Would you be surprised if Gary Sanchez, on October 4th or 5th, whenever the regular season ends, has more home runs than either Mike Stanton or Aaron Judge? Would you be surprised at
that? No. His numbers over his first 162 in the big leagues, I think he might have hit 60 home runs in his first 162 when they could keep him on the field. We'll get to the artist formerly known as Mike Stanton in a minute. But Sanchez has so much home run potential.
Yeah.
And we know that the other guys hit 110 home runs between them last year. Stanton. But Stanton was doing that in a nice, cozy, warm place in front of no one. Okay. The game has changed. Somebody said this the other day, Mike, and you'll appreciate this being from Boston. He's got Carl Crawford disease, only it's the New York version of Carl Crawford disease. He just looks so uncomfortable. I mean, I believe he's going to hit, okay? But if Sanchez ended up, to speaking to your question, with more home runs this season than either one of them, despite the grind of being a catcher, no, I would not be surprised.
I mean, Carl Crawford. Peter Francona is one of the smartest baseball people I have ever encountered in my life. And he had one of the great Carl Crawford lines of all time. For those of you who are not familiar with Carl Crawford, he's an all-star outfielder. A five-tool player with Tampa Bay. He ends up signing a multi-million dollar contract with the Boston Red Sox in the winter of, 2010 maybe, I'm not sure. And he's a disaster. And Tito, after Carl Crawford is packed off to Los Angeles in a clean-out-the-house deal that Larry Lucchino made with Stan Kasten, Carl Crawford, Josh Beckett, a couple of other guys to the Dodgers for, a couple of guys who are no longer with the Red Sox.
One of your favorite players, Gonzo.
Gonzo. Adrian Gonzalez, a team killer. A team killer. But anyway, Tito and Carl Crawford... I asked him about Carl Crawford, and he says, we hated him when he played against us. He was that good. We hated him. He said, unfortunately, he comes to the Red Sox, and we hated him when he played for us.
Mike, when you look at this Red Sox team, and J.D. Martinez so far, even though he has not hit a lot of home runs,
he can hit.
Has been exactly, I was talking to Alex Cora about him the other day, and he provides presence again in the middle of that batting order.
Yeah.
They are balanced right-handed and left-handed, but over 162, can they go toe-to-toe with not just Mr. Sanchez, not just Mr. Judge, not just Mr. Stanton, but the guy who's been their best player so far, Didi Gregorius?
Yeah. How do the Diamondbacks ever let Didi
It's amazing. It's going to go down as one of the worst trades ever because they basically got nothing in return. Yeah. It's a three-way with the Tigers. And
I tell you, when you look at the Red Sox, they are a very good team. I don't think they are as good a whole unit team as are the Yankees
right.
because of the bullpen.
Right.
The Red Sox they need that bullpen to be propped up. Now, Dave Dombrowski, he's been around baseball a long time, and he has a lot of talent at building teams and signing very expensive players.
Boy.
And one of the things that he has always had difficulty doing in each of his stops, whether you're talking about Montreal, Miami,
Detroit
or Boston, he has never really been able to come up with a five-star bullpen.
Yep.
And they're missing one or two ingredients in that bullpen in order to go the distance against the Yankees. The Yankees are really good.
We're talking with my pal Mike Barnicle on the Mike Lubica podcast. More with Mr. Barnicle in a minute, but first a word from Geico. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Barnacle's got an RV. Got him covered. Got a boat? He's got that too. Covered. How about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet. Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. Talking with Mike Barnicle. He's on the Gillette headset today. Michael, when you look at the Red Sox, and listen, there's always great urgency with the New York Yankees, okay, to win. And somehow they've managed to stay above 500 for 1,000 years. There, I have asserted, and I don't think you disagree with me, because of the payroll, because the Red Sox are right up against that 62% right. tax threshold,
right.
there's no more of a win-now team in this sport at this time than the 2018 Boston Red Sox.
Well, they're certainly one of a few win-now teams. I mean,
$223 million.
Well, look at the Los Angeles Dodgers. They have to win now, too, or else they're going to have to
Guess what? They're not going
team.
To win now.
Apparently not, from the look of it.
Unless they go make a big old trade for Manny Machado pretty quickly.
Yeah. Look, the Yankees are in a really, really good position here. I mean, Brian Cashman is a genius, the way he's done this team. They're still, well under the tax penalty.
Seventh biggest payroll. Who would ever thought the Yankees would have the seventh biggest payroll in baseball?
So they have all the financial space to make a major move on July 31st or before July 31st. The Red Sox don't. The Red Sox will not go over that cap because they'd have to.
It's punitive. Oh, my God.
I mean, it's like, triple the normal tax where they are now. If they go over the payroll cap now, they really get hit. They really get hit. And I don't think they'll do it.
And Brian can do it. And Brian has gotten younger. He's gotten his farm system deeper. The transformation since that trade deadline in 2016, when he trades away Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller and gets all these prospects and all these kids. He's now starting Andujar at third base. Yeah. He's starting Gleyber Torres. Well, the crown jewel of that deal was supposed to be a kid named Clint Frazier. He can't get it even on the field. I say he's had concussion issues. But, Mike, let me get back to the Red Sox for a second. They have three frontline starting pitchers. But when we're talking about bad contracts, how long did it take in Boston for people to look at Price as a bad contract? Now, I say that knowing somebody was going to pay David Price that money. Somebody was going to pay David Price $200 million plus to come. But Michael, even the 17-9 season, and even knowing what an innings eater he has been till he got hurt, I sat at Fenway Park last Saturday afternoon and watched him get hit every single inning he was in the game, okay? And then I couldn't wait to read the Boston Globe the next day because I always hear after a start like that, the Price has identified the mechanical difficulties he was having. And I'm thinking, at $217 million, I want you to have those figured out by the time the season starts.
Look, if David Price were here today doing this podcast with you and you... Yeah, you know, gave him two heaping glasses of sodium pentothal. I think he would be the first person on earth to tell you, first person right out of the box to tell you, he made a mistake in signing with the Red
Coming
Sox.
To Boston, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He should have taken the deal with the Cardinals. That was a good deal for him. It was a lot of money. It wasn't $230 million. I think it was like $190. That's enough to spend. That's
and by the way, always, Michael, you say to these guys, the difference in that money won't affect a single day of the rest of your life.
That's exactly right.
They're keeping score. They're keeping score.
Yeah, you're going to be able to buy food through the winter with $190 million. But again, it gets back to where the game is now dominated by two entities that have less to do with baseball than Rob Manfred has to do with baseball. Player agents and the Players Association. So the Players Association would have been furious with David Price had he taken the lesser offer. And his agent, I don't know who the agent is.
I don't know who his agent is.
But he wants the max offer because that's more money for him. He made a mistake. And the Red Sox kind of made a mistake. I understand they had the need for the big starter, you know, the big ace.
Yep.
And he is a big ace. Formerly an ace. He's no longer the big capital A ace, okay? So he comes to Boston, and when he comes to Boston, I think he's 31 when he comes. So right away, I mean, you got to be looking. And you want to talk about analytics? We were talking about analytics. The analytics for him at his age, signing the deal and the length of the deal, it's not in the club's favor.
Michael, I said this the other day, and I know you're going to agree with me. I think Kershaw's going to stay with the Dodgers, okay? But he has the option of leaving after this year. If he does, someone will make the same sort of mistake, and he's been a much better baseball pitcher than David Price, that the Red Sox made with Price. Those contracts for starting pitchers are so rarely good for the team. And the example I always use, the exceptions are
Chris Sale.
And we'll see what happens because he's going to come up shortly. Mike Mussina, when he left the Orioles, signed a 6-year, at the time it was big money, $89 million contract with the Yankees. At the end of those 6 years, they signed him for two more years. It never happens. Even CC Sabathia, who started to look like a cautionary tale for a long-term contract for an older starting pitcher, he's actually turned that around for the Yankees as he's reinvented himself as a junk ball guy. If you commit that much money to a starting pitcher, you will get burned in the end. That's what I believe.
Well, I don't disagree with you, especially given the age that they sign these guys. I mean, again, David Price, 31 years of age. I think he's got like a 7-year deal. I mean, come on. What's he going to be giving you at 38 years of age? I know what you're going to be giving him. You know, $23 million a year, thereabouts. It's not going to work out.
How much urgency is there about Dombrowski with Red Sox ownership? They've let him spend as much money as he wants. They have seen, you know, just from afar, I know there has been a mass exodus of people out of the baseball operations office, and he has put them right up to the nub on one of the most punitive taxes, what would be one of the most punitive taxes in the history of professional sports in this country. Is Dombrowski a Win Now baseball executive?
Yes, he is.
Oh, you think he is?
Yes. Yes, he is. I mean, that's why you got the payroll the way it is, and that's why you have, Price there, and that's why you have Chris Sale there. He is a Win Now guy, and he has the total support of the principal owner, John W. Henry, so he's fine. He's in good shape.
Talking to Mike Barnicle on the Gillette headset, just a couple more baseball questions for you. Would you be surprised if I told you only one team in the history of baseball with a payroll over $200 million has ever won the World Series?
Surprised?
Now, obviously, they've changed the rules, so they don't want you going over $200 million. The Dodgers, Mike, one team 9 years ago won the World Series with a payroll of over, and that was the 2009 New York Yankees. No one since.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me the Dodgers had
no,
a payroll.
No, but they
over.
Didn't win. I'm talking about a World Series winning team. The idea that you can spend your way to that trophy is fraudulent in baseball.
It's hard to do in baseball. I think it's much harder to do in baseball than it is in any other sport.
Right, right.
I mean, if you can go out in National Football, you'd have to be Einstein plus to understand their salary caps and everything like that. But if you can go out and spend and get yourself an A-plus quarterback, a younger Tom Brady on any National Football League team, the odds are that you're going to end up in the Super Bowl. If you can go out in an NBA team and get yourself a Kyrie Irving or the king,
right?
You're gonna end up in the NBA finals. Baseball, it's harder to do.
It's harder to do because even if you have a LeBron in baseball, and let's, for the sake of this conversation, we'll say Mike Trout, for example, we'll call him the LeBron of baseball.
Where's he going, by the way?
Well, I actually thought he signed his long-term extension way too early. But he's gonna get tired of not playing in October. I think he's played three playoff games in his career.
Well, not only that, Mike, but then it gets into a whole other aspect of the game, the marketing of baseball.
Right.
And lowering the demographic. So you have arguably the best baseball player in our generation playing in Anaheim.
Willie Mays-like skills.
Yes, with like maybe 1.5 million Twitter followers.
Right.
And you've got your average NBA semi-all-star on any team with like 5, 10, 15 million Twitter
right,
followers.
Right.
So I agree with you. I mean, he's going to get tired of playing in relative anonymity, not going to play October baseball, and I think he's going to end up coming to either Philadelphia. I think he's coming back east.
I wouldn't be surprised if he comes home and play. Plays for the Phillies. Is for the Phillies. And Mike, anybody who thinks that the Angels, because they're in, quote, Southern California, are a Los Angeles team, it's like thinking that the Brooklyn Nets are the same as the Knicks in terms of attention in New York City.
The Anaheim Angels might as well be playing in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I mean, they are no more Los Angeles than I am. And I ain't Los Angeles.
All right. We're talking to Mike Barnicle, who, again, has been a regular and a mainstay and a familiar presence on Morning Joe. So we can't. So now we're going to switch to politics. I was just on Morning Joe with Mike today. And off camera, we were having a conversation. And Mike has talked for 2 years, even before Donald Trump was president, about Trump fatigue and how it is exhausting on a day-to-day basis in this country, trying to keep up with the tweets and the insanity. And Mike, I'll just, without this becoming a runaway question, the great Don Hewitt, before he died, this was during the height of the Iraq War, and he saw the way he thought the country was going at the time. And he said, I was in World War II. I've seen everything in this country over the last 60 years, and I've always thought we were going to make it. He says, I'm not so sure anymore. And this is years before Donald Trump. Mike, do you not feel that this country, and I don't talk about political wonks, feels as if it's living on a fault line every single day of every single month of every single year?
I think, certain people in certain professions in certain cities think that. But I don't think that's the case in the country as a whole.
Good. Tell me why.
I think your average person, and I consider myself fairly average. They get up each day. They have a job to go to, most of them. They have families to take care of, most of them. Husbands and wives go to their different professions during the course of a day. They worry about their kids getting into college. They worry about the increased cost of gas. They worry about grocery prices. They worry about whether they're doing the best things that they can do so that their children, according to the American dream, will do better in this country than they are doing. I think there might be some doubt in their minds about that right now, whether their children will be better off than they are. But I think they are so busy with holding their own lives and families together that everything else, the tweets, Trump, all of it, it's on their screen, but it's not right at the top of their screen.
Mike, when
and
you...
It is exhausting.
It's exhausting. Yeah. I've never quite experienced anything like this. And Mike and his wife, Ann, they have three sons and a daughter. I have three sons and a daughter. Mike, his sons are his best friends. My sons are my best friends. Okay, so we've been incredibly blessed. But Michael, I do worry about the world that we have presented to our children. You know, I gave a commencement speech once at Christopher Lupica's high school graduation, and I said, you have one job as a parent. You want to accomplish one thing. Present your children with a better world than the one you were presented. And then I think of the one my father and the Greatest Generation guys presented to me, and I think, we've let them down, and I hope that they can do better presenting a world to their children than we've been able to present to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a legitimate worry. And what else is legitimate to worry about is having less to do with the day-to-day fire hose of news and scandals and outrageous tweets
right.
and language and behavior from the Oval Office is to worry and wonder about the damage that's already been done to the institution.
Yes,
of the
I was going to ask you about that, but you, okay, yeah.
Can it be repaired? I think it probably can, but how long will it take to be repaired? And can all of it be repaired? And the damage that's been done by two political parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, in the House and the Senate, refusing to address the reality that everyday citizens have to address, their lives and the country, because of their inability to get along together, to get anything done at all. I mean, if you know, all you have to do, you don't have to go to China to figure out what China is doing. You just have to read just a little about China and hear stories about from people who have just been to Beijing or Shanghai or Hong Kong. And they talk about their high-speed rail transit
right,
systems.
Right.
And they talk about their highways and the enormous construction going on. They are, well, in much of China, they're building it. It's brand new, and they're rebuilding what has been there for, you know, decades. Take a look around today on your ride home. Take a look at the bridges that you go beneath on the Merritt Parkway.
Right, right.
You know, take a look at the schools that your kids go to. The teachers can be the greatest in the world or not, but take a look at the textbooks that so many public school students take a look at. Take a look at a high school history book where World War II, the war your father fought in, the war my uncle died in,
right.
The war my dad served in. It's maybe, I don't know, covered in two pages, the war in Vietnam,
right.
maybe two pages. And I think if you look at all of that stuff and really think about it and listen to what's going on today, you realize that we have not taught our own children who we are
right.
as a nation, what
right.
we have meant to the world. We don't teach that. We don't know our own story.
Talking to my friend Mike Barnicle on the Mike Lupica podcast. He's on the Gillette headset today. You know what frightens me, Mike? And I'm sure that you have addressed this more than once, and I might just not have heard it on Morning Joe. The Constitution is such a great document, okay? The division of power and responsibilities and checks and balances in our government is a monument to democratic society, okay? And here comes this real estate guy from New York City, and it's like in this cunning way, he saw how he found the holes in it. He found out that it was a lot easier to be autocratic in this country. And he has systematically not just attacked the FBI and the First Amendment and the Department of Justice, but he himself, for his own purposes, has put the rule of law, one he could never explain, on a bet at risk.
Yeah. But he has thought about none of that.
No, I'm understanding that there's almost like a grifter-like mentality. And, you know,
kind of like?
Huh?
Kind of like.
No, we're talking about it today. Look at his doctor. Look at his lawyer, Michael Cohen. Look at the people who have been in his orbit. What I'm saying is he, in a way that he could, as I said to you, could never explain, he has exploited the weaknesses in our system.
Unwittingly, he has. One thing he does have a genius at is he has a genius at recognizing and capitalizing on resentment.
Yes.
I mean, he just has a genius at finding that out. The other stuff, he doesn't know what's in the Constitution.
You could stump him on how a bill becomes a law.
Wouldn't know. And the danger is not so much his total ignorance of the foundations that this country has been built on. It's what we were just talking about.
Right.
He has no real grasp of our story, of who we really
are,
what we've done.
Or respect for it, Michael.
Well, that's because he is so self-absorbed. He
right.
thinks only of himself. I mean, when this thing is over, and it will be over at some point, the last man standing will be Donald J. Trump. His family, they'll all be elsewhere. But Trump only concerns himself with himself.
You know Robert Mueller. You know him from his time, especially with the FBI in Boston, Massachusetts. You know what an amazingly honorable American life he has. And we were talking about this over coffee this morning. Isn't it amazing, because of the cowardly negligence on the part of Republicans in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, that you sometimes look at how fragile everything looks like now, and Robert Mueller and Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, look like all we have standing between us and the abyss.
Yeah, it does look like that from afar. But if you look at it, if you look at what's happened over the last 15, 16 months, the judicial branch works. And it's worked several times.
And the courts have worked with DACA and other things like that. The travel ban. And
yeah. The legislative branch has not worked, but it's not just for the last 15 months. It hasn't worked for a while. The executive, the presidency, we just talked about that. The damage that's been done to it, can it be corrected? Probably, but it's going to take a while. So you've got Bob Mueller, and he's a special prosecutor. And a lot of people... One thing that Trump has done very, very well and succeeded at is muddying the waters and impugning the integrity of institutions
right.
like the FBI, like the intelligence community, the CIA. And he's done a fairly effective job, a very effective job, actually, at branding fake news in this country.
Yeah.
A lot of people now think that what we do for a living
right.
in the news business, that's fake news. You guys are making it up
right.
or whatever. Or Trump is your only... target, you know, you just want to take him down. Bob Mueller is none of that. I can guarantee you that in the offices of the special prosecutor in Southeast Washington, D.C., there's no dartboard on the wall with Trump's picture on it.
right.
Bob
right.
Mueller took this job for the country, and that's his objective, to try and find out who is responsible for the damage that's been done to this country's electoral system by the Russians. And are they coming back? Are they still here? That's his principal job. Who allowed this to happen? Who, if anyone, aided and abetted the Russians? Who helped facilitate the Russians? Who talked to the Russians? Who opened the door and let them in? Which is basically the Russians have... it's an act of war against the United
100%.
States. And that's what his intent is, to find out who did this, can we stop them, and can they be held responsible for that crime?
And what you just said... The President of the United States has never, ever addressed that threat to our way of life. And Mike, it seems like a simple practical matter, but to raise this question. We've seen in all capital letters, no collusion, witch hunt. Okay. Now, if I'm clear on all that stuff and I'm Donald J. Trump, why wouldn't I want to sit down and tell my story to the special counsel?
Yeah.
If I've got nothing to hide, if my hands are completely clean, why is this man so resistant to having this interview with Robert Mueller?
Well, that I don't know. I don't know whether Donald J. Trump knows that. But if you're president of the United States, and you do know, you've been told repeatedly by several different branches of the government, people in several different branches of the government, beyond dispute, that the Russians did this. The Russians did A, B, and C, and are now doing D, E, and F. And they've done A, B, C, D, E, and F quite successfully here in this country. If you're president of the United States, you take an oath to defend the United States of America against enemies, foreign and domestic.
As Rod Rosenstein so eloquently stated on the, whatever we're having this conversation on Wednesday of Tuesday
yes.
of this week.
Yeah. So you got, as president of the United States, you're sworn by the oath you took to do something in defense of this country. So far, the president of the United States has dropped his oath.
Talking to Mike Barnicle on the Mike Lupica podcast, we talked a lot of baseball. We're talking a little politics. Mike, what did you think of the James Comey tour?
I think that he was really surprised at the reception he got. I think that Director Comey thought he was going to have rose petals thrown in his path, and then he was going to be greeted as a national hero. When it wasn't 100%, you know, idolatry for Jim Comey. You know,
I like him more than I don't like him, though.
Oh, I do as well. I do as well. And I know people who know him and they swear by him.
Yeah,
he's a great guy.
Same,
great guy.
Same, yep.
I don't dispute that. But there's a part of his story that just doesn't hold up. And it is that part of what are you doing having that initial press conference
about Hillary Clinton
when you know that literally is again it's an unwritten rule that you broke, and it might even be a written rule that I don't know. I'm not familiar with
FBI agents we have both spoken to, Mike, were shocked, who respect the hell out of Comey,
yes,
are still shocked at what he did.
Yeah. And then, you know, the election eve gambit. Listen, Hillary Clinton ran one of the world's worst campaigns.
Might have been the world's worst campaign.
You cannot be elected president, and you should not be elected president by basically coming to the country with the message, it's my turn.
That's so
okay?
True.
So, but Jim Comey really harmed that flawed campaign. Really,
yes.
Really. May have been a lethal bullet. We don't know that.
We'll never know. We'll never know. We're talking about Mike Barnicle. Mike, I was talking to James Carville, our old friend, the other day.
Yeah.
And he is maybe overly optimistic about what is going to happen in the voting booth next November, okay? And he has a funny riff, and I'm not doing it justice. He said, Mike, if there's one thing that I feel I'm kind of expert in, it's intelligent women. And he said, I can tell you that women in this country are pissed off. And he said, we can analyze what's going to happen in November any way we want to. He says, but those women that I'm talking about are going to turn out in great numbers and turn this thing on its side.
Well, you know, I love James and I love his wife, Mary, and Mary Matlin loves Mike Pence. So there are women out there, you know, who they won't buy that. There are people out there who won't buy, the counter opposition line to Donald Trump.
Right.
I think there are enough of them that the Democrats will more likely than not take control of the House of Representatives.
What about the Senate?
I think that's going to be a tough climb. Tough climb. But let me ask you, if the contest for the presidency of the United States was like, say, we were 2 weeks out.
Right.
And Trump was on the ballot against a generic Democrat. Who do you think would win?
Oh, I still think Trump would win. Because of those pockets, I think he's still strong in those pockets of the country who are a little slow to catch on that the guy who said, I am the voice of the people who got left behind, he's left them behind now. And I don't know when they're going to figure that out. But, Mike, Do you believe Donald J. Trump will finish out his term?
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Yeah, I think because this latest, the latest news about, Trump's lawyers meeting with the special prosecutor, and the special prosecutor indicates that we can always subpoena the president. I think that'll probably end up happening, and then it'll go to the courts. You're talking now a year and a half time before that is decided. So, yeah, I think because of that, he'll play off the clock and will finish out his term. I think there's maybe a chance, slight chance, that during the course of that time, he announces that he will not stand for re-election. And if he does stand for re-election, I do think then, in 2020, in November of 2020, I think he would lose, because even then, I think by the midsummer 2020, people will realize, look around, say, hey, the coal mine's not coming back.
Right, right.
Hey, the paper mill, it's not coming back.
All those things he said about Carrier, how'd that work out for all those people in Indianapolis?
You know, I mean, the assembly plant, geez, I thought they were coming back and rebuilding it. They didn't.
China's kicking our ass.
The tax cut, it's not quite what I thought it was. The banks have gone up in their interest rates, and they're doing really well, but I'm still doing my 2009, 2010 salary, and I feel pretty good about holding on to that. And, but my friend got a tap on the shoulder, and, Ronald the Robot's going to be doing his job starting in 2021. There's a whole mix of things that can happen in a very short period of time.
All right, last question for my friend, Michael Barnacle, who is one of the first big guys in newspapers who was nice to me when I was starting out in this business.
That was my mistake.
Michael, when you look at the Democratic Party, is there a centrist, populist, non-Bernie Sanders, non-Elizabeth Warren Democrat who you at least spiritually could get behind in 2020?
Yeah, there's more than a few that I could get behind. I tell you, someone to watch out for.
Is it the mayor of New Orleans?
Yeah, it's Mitch Landrieu.
Yeah, I don't know why I knew you were going to say that, but I did.
He's got a story to tell, and he's from the real America, and he ran a real American city, not without its problems, still today. He can talk. He's one of the best people to address what is at its root our most fatal issue, race, in this country. He can talk to it and about it legitimately. So there's Mitch Landrieu. There's a couple of other people probably that we haven't heard. There's, there's also the former vice president of the United States.
I know.
Joe Biden, who, if he twins up with the right running mate, watch out.
Joe Biden, Kamala Harris?
No.
Joe Biden, Cory Booker?
No. Joe Biden, Sally Yates? Yeah.
Sally Yates is another great American. Michael, thank you for doing this today. It's always a big ask to ask somebody who's just been on television for 3 hours to come do this. We could have done the whole hour on baseball.
We could have.
We could have done the whole hour on politics, but we would have had more fun doing baseball. Everybody listens to this podcast. We're over 100 now of these, and this is the kind of conversation we have every single week. So continue to download it. The numbers continue to grow. Continue to subscribe. Go ahead and leave comments. Leave comments about Mike, because he's always looking for ways that he can improve. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody.
I read every comment, too.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.